This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Final Football Friday of the regular season, and Giants season comes to an end Sunday as they entertain Dak and the Dallas Cowboys out at MetLife Stadium. Let's welcome aboard right now Art Stapleton, covers the Giants for NorthJersey.com, joins us now. Hey, Art, first and foremost, Happy New Year to you and your family, and appreciate the time this morning.
Thanks, Moose. Same to you and yours, and Hoff behind the glass and everybody else over there at the fan.
Yeah, no question. You know, Art, a lot to get into with you. Let's start with the GM, Joe Shane. You're obviously, whether it be Schefter, Rappaport last weekend, the lean is that he is going to remain. What do you lean in? You know, what do you read into the decision here if that's the way it plays out, where the Giants are going to stay the course with the general manager?
You know, I think, Moose, you kind of hit it on your open today when you were talking about the whole situation and laying it out. And I think, you know, there's ways to look at the GM job. And if you want to completely tie it in with the head coaching job, then the simple thing is you look at the standings, you look at the record, and you just fire everyone who is responsible. I don't know necessarily if the Giants are looking at the GM job solely through that lens. I think they looked at the head coaching job that way, and clearly Brian Daboll lost his job with 7 games to go. I think it's too easy, too simple, kind of assessing the situation with a hatchet rather than a scalpel to just say the record is what it is and that's why Joe Shane should lose his job. So I do think there's infrastructure that's been set up, but I know it's become a joke with Giants fans, the idea that, well, Joe Shane brought them into the 21st century, so all of a sudden, you know, he's lauded in the building. It's not that. It's the way you scout. It's the way you have your personnel department set up. It's a lot of different things that take years to be put together. So I can understand from that perspective how they would want to keep that side of the football operation together.
When you look at in terms of leading the head, you know, submitting the list, you know, as it's been reported of you know, head coaching candidates here, when you look, is it, you know, who ends up, is it going to come down to ownership ultimately making the decision here in terms of the next Giant head coach, Art?
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe Shane remaining as a general manager, I think he will have a voice in it, but ultimately it will be ownership. Now, how does that ownership take place? Is it still John Mara and Steve Tisch leading the way? Are they bringing in more family members or more members of the front office, that inner circle of the New York Giants? You know, there are several ways to look at it. I think you look at a $10 billion business that is running pretty successfully, and then you look at the football side of things, and things need to change there. So do they open up the search committee, so to speak? Do they bring in other people that are valued in the organization and say, we want you to kind of sit in this meeting and see how things go? You look at what the Dolphins have decided to do. That news came out yesterday, bringing in Troy Aikman to be someone who has a voice. You know, do they want Eli Manning to sit in? You know, that has not been reported. I'm just throwing it out there. But I do think that they will be more open-minded than what they have been accused of in the past.
Art, if I were to ask you right now, what do you think Shane's greatest failure first 4 years here as GM would be?
Boy, that's a good one. I think missing the top picks in the draft certainly hurt. And I think, you know, the two picks that obviously everybody talks about is Evan Neal and Deontay Banks in the first round. But the reality is, I think as a first-time GM, he didn't anticipate the ramifications coming out of 2022 and the playoffs, and hold firm on the idea that we are not the playoff team that's just a play or two away of beating the Eagles and representing the team in the NFC Championship game. And I think he's come to admit that. He said he's made mistakes. And I think his biggest issue is the fact that he followed such a bad regime under Dave Gettleman where, again, face value, they hit on some picks. I mean, Dexter Lawrence wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Dave Gettleman. But that does not necessarily make up for the lack of infrastructure that just has kind of crumbled from Jerry Reese to Dave Gettleman. So I think the inconsistency in his approach, that when Joe Shane came here and stood at the podium at his press conference accepting the job, and then how that changed the year later. There's no way they thought they were going to win a playoff game that first year. The fact that they did, they had to adjust with Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones and make a commitment that I don't think in hindsight Shane would have wanted to make. And I think that really affected how people view his decision making. I think he's trying to get back to where he thought he would be, but I do think those lessons were hard lessons and they've resulted in a lot more losing than they anticipated.
Yeah, no question. It's been a long 3 years, Art, and you do a great job of covering the Giants for NorthJersey.com, but, and you know that better than anybody. If I were to ask you, Art, you know, take the emotions out of it, and you hear from the Giant fan, you hear from the Giant fan on social, we hear them right here on WFAN all over the place, right? And they're upset and angry. When you look at the failures over the last 3 years, where Dave's is out, Bowen's out, assistant defensive line coach is out, you're sitting right now on this Friday with the second overall draft choice, depending on results this upcoming weekend, week 18 of the NFL. Do you think this team failed from a roster perspective, or do you think this team failed more so a case of where they were poorly coached?
Well, I think this year, especially during the season, I don't think there's any question that this roster and this team, the way it was constructed, was in position to win these games. I mean, Moose, they were there to win these games. I mean, you know, you talk about not only beating the Chargers in a game that no one thought they'd win and then beating the Eagles on a Thursday night, but then the losses that they had, and we can go on and on and on, but it's not about moral victories, but it's just about, you know, if the team is in position to win games and for decision-making and players not executing, that's a coaching issue. And again, I'm not trying to, you know, separate the baby and say, well, you know, Brian Daboll was this and Joe Shane was that. But it's funny, Moose, how, you know, Joe Shane, remember a couple of years ago when the idea was Joe Shane was on the headsets and listening to what the coaches were saying. You know, we don't want the GM involved in the day-to-day operations of the game. But then when the games aren't won, we want to loop them all together. So I would say this year it's definitely a coaching issue, especially on the back end. If you look at what's happened offensively, you know, the offensive line, I heard you earlier, is not the big problem that everyone thought it would be. You have a young quarterback here. You have players who have kind of stepped up and accepted foundational roles here. So I do think that they made that decision that it was a coaching issue. They essentially told you without speaking by sending a statement that when they fired Brian Daboll, they viewed this more as a coaching issue than a GM issue, because they could have fired Joe Shane on the same day as they fired Brian Daboll, put Brandon Brown or someone else in an interim basis at general manager, and moved on and cleaned the slate. And they didn't do that. And I think part of that is because they have recognized that the decisions that were made on game day were owned by the coaching staff as much as they were by the front office.
Art, if I were to ask you, what would you be looking for in the next Giant head coach? What characteristics, what traits, what are you looking for, Art?
I want to go in with an open mind, Moose, to be honest. You know, I kind of joked in promoting the appearance. I said, you know, clear, open.
It was a great tweet, Art. I got to be honest with you. I love the tweet. Who doesn't love Airplane?
Yeah, exactly. You know, but I think you need to just get the best coach. And sometimes that's simplistic, but don't pigeonhole yourself to ties to Joe Shane and ties to the Giants. You know, everybody jumps on the Steve Spagnuolo and Antonio Pierce and the idea that, you know, yes, interview all of them, interview everyone. The one thing, Moose, that I don't think people appreciate is that since 2022, when they had their last head coaching search, this is now the fifth head coaching search since Tom Coughlin left the organization, which is insane. But the time frame is not as condensed. You have a lot of time. A lot of that is rules by the league of when you can start interviewing people and all of that stuff. I would take my time. I'm not looking for a hot shot young coordinator, old coordinator. I just want the right fit. I think Jackson Dart needs to be a priority for the head coach. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that head coach has to be an offensive mind. They could bring in an offensive mind to work with Jackson Dart. What's your vision? You know, I know you mentioned the Tomlin, and everyone is jumping on Tomlin Harbaugh and the loser. Will they be a head coach? I've got another existing coach for Sunday that I think Giants fans should be watching. And that's the other game in the AFC North. And that's the Browns and the
Stefanski.
Bengals. And I'm watching Kevin Stefanski, because if people forget, when Pat Shurmur was hired as head coach here, and that seems like forever ago, he wanted Kevin Stefanski to come with him from Minnesota. The Giants liked Kevin Stefanski to be his offensive coordinator. At that time, Stefanski, I think he was only a quarterback's coach in Minnesota. Stefanski, two-time coach of the year, you know, they haven't gotten the quarterback thing right in Cleveland. If they have a divorce there in Cleveland, Stefanski is somebody who, to me, would be at the top of the list. You've got an offensive mind. You've got a guy who knows how to run an organization from a coaching aspect. I like Stefanski even more so than Tomlin or Harbaugh, because I think here's why, Moose. It's not that I don't like them as candidates. I just think if one of them loses and then all of a sudden they're going to divorce themselves from either Pittsburgh or Baltimore, I think the TV angle, and I'll give Peter Schrager a heads up because he kind of mentioned it, they go for 1 year in TV, and then the next year, they're going to have their pick of the litter wherever they want to go in the NFL. And who knows, you know, Andy Reid maybe is up on retirement. Now Harbaugh, if he's the loser, goes to Kansas City and takes over there. You know what I mean? I don't know necessarily if they lose that game, all of a sudden they're looking to jump right in. Whereas Stefanski, I think he's young enough. He doesn't have the Super Bowl. He's not proven. I think he's the existing head coach to keep an eye on coming out of action on Sunday.
You know, do you think the failures of McAdoo, who they knew, you know, Shurmur, Judge, Daboll, do you think that leads, and I understand the idea of talking to everybody and anybody, but do you think deep down they'd like to bring somebody in that's done the job before?
I think they'd love the fact. I think that because it comes down to coaching staff and how you assemble your coaching staff. And I think that's an underreported, underappreciated problem with every head coach that has come here since Tom Coughlin, is the building of the coaching staff has not been easy. Case in point, Joe Judge brought in a lot of his guys, coaches' guys, guys that were with him in New England. They failed as a coaching staff. You know, Pat Shurmur, his coaching staff failed. He had Lou Anarumo, who is a coaching candidate here for the head coaching spot. They had him and they lost him immediately after 1 year. He did a great job with the secondary, and then they lost him to a coordinator job in Cincinnati. I think ideally they want somebody who has enough connections that could build a coaching staff. You know, with Joe Judge, I'll make the argument, Moose, that that was timing as much as anything else. I like what they did. I like the fact that they went out of the box. I like the fact that they brought in a quote-unquote CEO coach. You know, people forget Joe Judge's entire regime here with the Giants, as bad as it ended, was all held under COVID restrictions in the NFL. We forget what that was like. He didn't have one team meeting in the auditorium in the building. You know, I remember Xavier McKinney telling us the spring after Joe Judge left, so it was 2022, that was the first time that he was actually in a defensive backs meeting room in the Giants facility. He was drafted by Judge when Judge was a first-year head coach, and he had not had one position meeting in the building with his other DBs. And, you know, again, timing is everything. Some guys don't work out because of where they're at. We see it with quarterbacks, and I think we see it with head coaches. So I like the idea of having a proven head coach. But I don't know necessarily if that needs to be the be-all, end-all, because I think there are a lot of questions regarding, say, a Mike McCarthy. I think if you just look at it at the surface, you say he's a coach who has won, he's worked with great quarterbacks, let's bring him in and work with Jackson Dart. I don't know necessarily if that solves what the Giants' initial issue is here with the head coach. So I'm a little leaning away from McCarthy a little bit, and I may end up looking foolish because, you know, he's the guy. But that's kind of where I'm looking. I'm all over the place, Moose, but I'm open to anything.
No,
I've seen enough problems.
Art, I get it. It's been a long season. You know that better than anybody, Art. So I get why you're all over the place, and hopefully 2026 brings different fortunes, obviously, for Big Blue. Let's ask about Dart here. Any doubt, because they, you know, and the reports annoy me. They really do, and the conversation annoys me. But I'll ask it to you this way, Art. From your understanding, are there any doubts in the building about Jackson Dart being the franchise quarterback?
I don't think so. You know, and I have written that, you know, what I said was a couple weeks ago before it even started was the idea of if you want to get rid of Joe Shane and you want to restructure this entire front office and the personnel department, go ahead. I can't argue against it based on the record. But just know that if you get rid of the head coach and the general manager who drafted Jackson Dart, you may be opening yourself up to bringing in someone into the building that if you want to have a clear slate, a clean slate, and say, no, we want to hire you, what are you going to do with our team? Well, if you want to have a preconceived notion that, well, you have to take Jackson Dart as your quarterback, that was what some people didn't like what happened with Daniel Jones when Brian Daboll and Joe Shane came in. They felt like ownership forced Daniel Jones upon them to be here as the head coach, I mean, as the quarterback. So I believe in Jackson Dart. I think Jackson Dart has shown enough to this organization. Why would you want to move away from that? But look, if you're sitting there with the number one overall pick, and that could still happen this weekend, I mean, it's not a huge leap to think that the Raiders go out and beat, you know, the Mahomes-less Chiefs, and then the Giants lose to the Cowboys, and somehow they get the two results that they need to be back at number one. You know, look, Moose, everybody watched Fernando Mendoza yesterday. Do I think he's better than Jackson Dart? No. But I can't tell you what the next GM or head coach is going to think. And we've seen this NFL enough where there were people who, obviously, the Saints could have taken Jackson Dart at number 9 overall and run away. I mean, the Giants had to trade back into the first round to get Jackson Dart at 25. So there are clearly people in the NFL who might not believe in Jackson Dart as much as you or I do. So I think the organization believes in him, but I do think that they owe it to themselves to kind of keep themselves open to what's the next plan for the guys that come in and you hire. You can't look at it and say, we're not going to hire you because you don't believe in Jackson Dart, because we've seen things go crazy and go haywire and go sideways when I think you can't anticipate what might happen. So for me, you know, Jackson Dart's the guy, but that's what I say.
I'm with you. And Art, here's the other deal. You know, I've said it before, you know, and, you know, I'm curious what your thought. I think Dart makes this job even that much more attractive. Whether you're a coordinator, whether you're a former head coach looking for your next opportunity, because you're stepping into a building where you're not searching for the quarterback. The quarterback is here.
100%. And look, we talked about Shane, 22-23. I know from talking to people, and I know what happened. I mean, that 2022 season, Joe Shane was scouting quarterbacks. They anticipated that the 2023 draft was going to be all about getting their franchise quarterback. They figured they were probably going to be in the top five in drafting, and that's the way it was going to happen, and it was a C.J. Stroud draft, and so they really liked C.J. Stroud. Well, guess what? The team went out, and they won games, and they won in the playoffs, and they put you in the middle of the late 20s in the pick, and you end up with Deontay Banks because you had no chance of getting those quarterbacks. The reality is you have one now in the building, and people love Jackson Dart. The fan base loves Jackson Dart. The whole concussion thing, I think, was blown out of proportion, created a narrative that didn't need to be there. He's 22 years old. I am, like I said, when I'm hiring a head coach, I want to know his plan for Jackson Dart. Not because I'm just going to hire him because he's going to help Jackson Dart, but I need to know what his plan is for Jackson Dart moving forward. And to me, the attractive nature of this job certainly begins with Jackson Dart. But it's not only Jackson Dart. I do think they have some talent here, some young talent, that it wouldn't surprise me if a coach looks at this team and says, you know what, I could win with this team next year. Give me this opportunity.
Yeah, and Art, there's numerous examples, and you know, two more before we let you go, Art. There's numerous examples across the National Football League. You look at Jacksonville with Liam Cohen, Ben Johnson in Chicago, obviously Vrabel with the New England Patriots, and we saw the thumping they put on the New York Jets this past Sunday, where You know, if you got the quarterback in place, you bring in the right head coach, make the right personnel decisions in free agency in the draft, and all of a sudden, and that's what the NFL wants, all of a sudden your fortunes change in the calendar year.
Yeah, no doubt. And you mentioned all three of those guys. You know, Vrabel, people viewed as a slam dunk. Ben Johnson was the hottest candidate and coordinator for years. But Liam Cohen, there were a lot of people who felt as though Liam Cohen was probably a year too soon, maybe way too soon. You know, and then we know what happened. You mentioned earlier the idea of, you know, they kept Baalke on, Trent Baalke as the GM. But then when Liam Cohen, when it was the idea that, well, we can get Liam Cohen if we get rid of Trent Baalke, well, they got rid of Trent Baalke. This whole thing, and I think it matters, Moose, I don't believe that Joe Shane is a toxic general manager to the point where his presence is going to turn away head coaching candidates. I think back when they hired Joe Shane, I think keeping Joe Judge was going to prevent you from getting the top general manager candidates because of the way Joe's tenure ended those last 2 weeks. He was a national laughingstock, and that was unfortunate for Joe Judge, but that's the way it happened. I don't think you're looking at the same situation, and I honestly, I don't know if there's that one head coach that you would sell your soul for right now. If this were last year and it was Vrabel and Vrabel said, I'm coming, but I want to bring in my own general manager, then I'd seriously consider saying, you know what, okay, we're going to bring in a new general manager because we want Mike Vrabel. I don't know necessarily if you have that coaching candidate that you're going to do that for. So, yes, there are many ways to skin that cat, right, Moose? But yeah. Liam Cohen, everybody looks at Liam Cohen now. He was not, when he was hired, it was not a, boy, this guy is ready to go. There were a lot of people. And remember, what was the first thing people talked about Liam Cohen? He couldn't pronounce Duval in his press conference when he got
that odd presser, too.
Well, guess what? They certainly love Liam Cohen down in Jacksonville right now. They may be the best team in the AFC by the time this thing is all said and done.
Yeah, Art, last one for you. How do you think it looks Sunday against the Cowboys?
How much is Dak going to play? You know, I mean, they've certainly kind of leaked it out there that it seems like Dak is going to start the game, but I don't know how much more he's going to play. Look, the X factor, as always, is Jackson Dart. And Jackson Dart is not going to give an inch. You know, so as long as he's on the field, I think the Giants have an opportunity. It tells me it would kind of be funny that full circle after all the hand wringing last week that somehow the Giants ended back up at the top of the draft if they lost this weekend. I could see the Giants lose that 1 o'clock game and then all of a sudden all the attention goes to what's happening in Las Vegas with the Raiders and the Chiefs. So I think it'll be a close game. It'll be kind of a wacky game like last week was. But I think the Giants, if they're going to try to win, I think they're going to have an opportunity to win. And I don't get a sense that this team, the only way that they are going to quote unquote tank a game is if they take guys off the field, you know, but you don't think Brian Burns wants to get to 20 sacks. I mean,
of course he does.
You know, the idea, he's at 16 and a half now. I mean, so you're telling me that if Dallas is tanking and they don't have Dak Prescott and they have Joe Milton out there, that Brian Burns doesn't want to be on the field to have an opportunity to get a sack every play. I think it'll be close. I don't know what the stands are going to be like, but to me, Jackson Dart's on the field. He's your quarterback. Believe in your quarterback and go cheer him on to finish the season and see where it goes. Because I think starting Monday morning at around 8:30, which is when we got to be in the building for everything that's starting, it's going to be a new world again for the New York Giants. And just because you have all that positivity when you're going into the offseason, I'm sure not everybody's going to be happy.
Art Stapleton, NorthJersey.com. Art, appreciate it. Once again, Happy New Year to you and your family. Enjoy the game on Sunday, and you do a great job covering Big Blue. But thanks for the time this morning.
Thanks a lot, Moose. Happy New Year to you and your family and everybody else over there and everybody out there listening. Appreciate it.
You got it. There you have it. Art Stapleton. And we'll see a change abound for the New York Giants starting Monday. We'll see how it plays out this upcoming Sunday at home against the Dallas Cowboys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Pete Hoffman, cross the way other side at the controls. Hit me up on X at Mark Melusis. Let's head back to the busy calls. Giants, the big theme early on. North Haldon we go. It's Ryan. It's the fan. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, Moose. What's going on? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Ryan. What's on your mind, bud?
Hey, I got more of like an observation here. I'm a sports broadcaster. I do a lot of high school sports here in the Jersey, New York City metro area. And it's not really even a question for you because I don't really know how you would answer this question, but like, why aren't you doing Giants games, man, here on the radio?
What do you mean, why am I – what do you mean, what am – in terms of play-by-play?
Exactly, yeah. I'm a big fan of what you do with Rutgers, and it's just like it's an observation, I guess, more so. I'm a big fan of what you do,
Giants games, man. No, I appreciate that, Ryan. But, I mean, Bob does a great job. I don't do play-by-play for Rutgers. Chris Carlin does. I do pre- and post-game.
You're on the pre- and post. My apologies.
Yeah. No, all good. All good. And John and Tiki and everyone with the Giants, they do an amazing job. I appreciate the compliment, Ryan. You know, I love football. Obviously, the Giants and Jets wish the seasons had gone a lot better this year. What high schools do you cover, Ryan?
I do a couple in the area here. I know I did a St. Joe's. It was a playoff game. Holmdel was incredible. They had this kid, Jack Cannon. He had 9 touchdowns. I think I didn't do that game. It was in their sectional semifinal. And the game I did, he had a 70-yard passing touchdown to open the game and then a 65-yard run on like a 3 offensive lineman set. Lacrosse is really my favorite sport, followed by football, close second. Don Bosco Prep being one of the schools I cover. A little bit of club lacrosse here and there. Part of the side hustle.
Gotcha. Well, enjoy it, Ryan. That's great.
Absolutely.
You're getting the play-by-play, and you got a great voice. So happy New Year. Appreciate the call, and good luck with all your coverage, including my alma mater when you look at Don Bosco Prep out there in Ramsey, New Jersey. Let's head out to Oceanside. It's Joe. It's the fan. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, Mark, I think you're great. This is what I think the Giants should do. I think they should keep Kaffa. I think they should hire Spagnuolo as a defensive, as an assistant coach. And I really believe that the biggest problem with Joe Shane is he doesn't see. He should have got rid of Neil, Banks, and Hyatt. Hyatt made Dart and Winston look bad and cost some games. Nobody says nothing about that. Banks made them lose games. Their offense, they don't have many weapons, and Kaffa, I think, is doing fine with them. You know, and I think the defense laid down. That's why they lost so many games.
No. Hold on a second. Like, I don't think I'd use the term laid down. They didn't execute. Like, laid down means, like, you quit. You stop competing. I just think they were coached poorly. Like, I don't think Shane Bowen is a particularly good defensive coordinator. I said it when they hired him. I said it before the start of the season. Like, I just not a huge fan. So, I would not use the term laid down. Kafka's going to get an opportunity to interview. I think it's a difficult sell, to be honest with you, Joe. If you decide to say, I'm going to stay the course with somebody who was part of the coaching staff and was in the building for the last 3-4 years. I think that's a very, very difficult sell. Instead of, you know, the decision, if we go on the idea that we're sticking with the general manager, and I'm going to tell you that Mike Kafka, and I remember him as a player at Northwestern, but that he can't be a head coach in the NFL or he's not well-respected or he doesn't have a great rapport relationship. I've had Giant fans call up before and say maybe you keep him aboard because of his rapport relationship with Jackson Dart. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I mean, that's on the impending or whoever the Giants decide to bring in as the next head coach. I think it's difficult, though, to sell that to your fan base. I do think now, if he stepped in and, you know, the Giants, you know, won a number of these games under his guise and guidance as head coach, then I think we could be having a different discussion. But they didn't. You know, and we're sitting here, depending on the results, the Giants could have anywhere from the number 1 overall pick to dropping all the way down to 7 based on what happens on Sunday. Sayasa, we go. It's Frank. It's a fan. What's going on, Frank?
Yeah, hi, Moose. I've talked to you a number of times. I appreciate every time you take my call on Saturday mornings with Schmelz. But, you know, with all due respect to Art Stapleton, all he spoke about basically was offense. We're putting numbers on the board. Yes, Dart's the quarterback. The offensive line has performed better. We're putting numbers on the board, Moose. But for weeks, I've been saying it to you. We have two NFL former players on the Fan that said the same thing. Carl Banks says the same thing. What I'm referring to is we are not fast enough on defense. The pass coverage is not fast enough on defense. Carl Banks talks about not establishing angles. We don't tackle well enough. We don't tackle well enough. Even in the Raiders game, there were blown coverages. There was a point in the game where it was 20 to 10, and I'm sitting there watching going, here we go again. When they're in the red zone.
But then you had Banks with the kick return for a touchdown and made it 27 to 10.
I understand we made plays that game, but I'm talking about the struggles defensively that we still have on the team. You have two former NFL players on the Fan that say the same things, Moose. With all due respect to Stapleton, he mostly spoke about offense. The problem, and you just had a caller say, most of those games were lost because of defense. No, they didn't lay down. They're just not good enough, Moose. They're just not good enough.
Well, I think it's execution. Can I ask you, do you think Shane Bowen did a great job of making use of the strengths of that defensive unit this year?
No, I didn't want to get let go of Wink Martindale. But Banks, I even said to you on the last Saturday morning
show.
I
don't disagree that they could use a lockdown corner and more speed on defense. Speed kills. Everyone wants to get faster. Every team wants to get faster. I don't disagree with that. And you can look at the tackling on the Giants as well. You can look at defensive breakdowns in the defensive secondary. I could also look at the idea that, you know, if I have a great pass rush, and I'm able to generate a tremendous amount of guys that can get to, you know, have great pressure rates, that would negate a deficiency in speed in the secondary. Because what does that do?
What did Banks say last week? I discussed this with you on a Saturday morning, that the secondary is not in sync with the front seven. You said it yourself, Moose.
I'm not saying that, Frank, but that comes down to coaching. That's not a GM issue. That's a coaching issue.
You sure it's not just talent?
Well, I think the Giants can improve their talent level. I'm not telling you that this is a perfect roster. This is not a championship team that all of a sudden now is in play for the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. No, I never said that.
Secondary problems too, Moose.
But I think you play, but Frank, you do have secondary problems. But Frank, we're just going around and around. Yes, I don't disagree with that. I don't disagree with the fact that there needs to be improvements. And you play defense as a group, as a unit. You know, all three levels, whether it be the defensive line, linebackers, and then your defensive secondary, you play as one unit. And if you don't play as one, if there is not a great unison or connectivity between all three levels, you know what? You are ultimately going to fail. The great defenses, the all-time great defenses, they played as one, regardless of the personnel or some of the changes, guys coming in off the bench. They had a great understanding of what they needed to do down in and down out. Has that been the Giants? No. I mean, it hasn't been. I've seen it with the Giants before. I saw it, you know. I saw when, you know, in the, you know, the mid to late 80s. I saw it in 86 and 90. I saw it in, you know, 2007. I saw it in 2011. You know, to varying degrees when you're looking at strengths and weaknesses of those defenses. But they had a great understanding of what they needed to do. Saw to that, goal line stand that turned that season around down in D.C. against the Commanders, or then the Redskins. Let's head out to Los Angeles. It's Barry. It's the Fan. What's going on, Barry?
Hey, Mark. Thanks again for taking the call. I just
What's going on, Barry?
You know,
for me,
good. I wanted to ask you. I see a lot of hypocrisy in the Maras, you know, and I respect them and respect their family. Longtime Giant fan, but what's the difference between cutting Daniel Jones, you know, and tanking for the purposes of a better word, tanking eight games to protect $22 million and another $20 million guarantee, which is about, you know, $40 or $50 million in guarantees. So you cut the guy, you take the best quarterback off the roster last year, you make Daves win with, you know, the likes of the backups, and then you don't calculate the draft pick costs. you know, what's the difference in guaranteed money to free agents when you could, you know, slot in two number twos, a second number one, versus the guaranteed money to free agency, you know, to free agents, and you can fill that with draft picks, and you're not willing to give up one game in roster management. I'm not talking about laying down guys, you know, but why are you starting Dart? Why are you starting Burns in a game where you know if you lose that game, you get the number one pick, and you could come back in Dallas, you know, come back home, play Dallas, win that game, and you're still picking the number one pick. I don't get the difference. You know, Mara was willing to, you know, it seems to me that the Mara family was willing to protect $40 million in guarantees and cut Daniel Jones, which was our best chance of winning those games last year, Dave's best chance of keeping his job, and then he's not willing to do it, you know, for draft picks, same money. I just don't get it.
Well, I don't think it's one and the same, even though you lay it out as one and the same, right?
Right.
Daniel Jones asked for his release. Daniel Jones went to them and asked for his release.
Yeah, but they...
And the Giants granted
it. I agree, but
No, hold on a second. Let's just, like, continue the conversation, because you can't... Sure. You can't tell a story without, you know, just being factually correct. So it reached its end. You know, Dave's had reached his end with Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones's relationship with Dave's at that point in time wasn't particularly good. He had reached his end. He wanted out. And the Giants granted him his release. And they landed in Minnesota. And then eventually signed, you know, with the Indianapolis Colts, and had great success earlier in the season before rupturing his Achilles against the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, a number of weeks ago. And that led to Philip Rivers being brought out of retirement after 5 years. But that story, or everything that you're kind of laying out, isn't exactly the way that it played out. It was at the end for Jones. They didn't want to lay down or tank. The Giants weren't going to do that against Vegas, regardless of what Vegas did. And I said before last Sunday's game out there in Las Vegas, the Giants could go out there and play. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to play well. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win the game. And everyone looks at Bowers and Crosby and Chin, the three guys that didn't play for Vegas. The Raiders stunk with them.
Right.
You know, let's be honest. I mean, the Raiders were in play for the number one overall pick, and those guys played. Right. So, let's not make it out to be like they were some great difference maker. And I get Bowers has been dealing with the balky knee throughout the course of the season, and Crosby can go out there and hop on social media and the like. But there is a difference. I mean, Barry, you lay it out like it's not, but there is a discernible difference between the two. You're bothered that the Giants don't have the number one overall pick. Okay, they don't. Right now, as it stands, could the Giants end up losing Sunday to Dallas, and the Chiefs end up where the Raiders end up victorious over Kansas City on Sunday? You know, that could happen. And you know what? If that does transpire, the Giants are back to having a number one overall pick, and Giant fans can go out there and celebrate 2026.
Yeah, I agree with you that, you know, for me, like the tanking word is a bad word. I think it's the teams that kind of go for the number one pick. Our roster management, and I guess I remember it differently with Daniel Jones. I remember the $22 million injury guarantee being, you know,
factor. I mean, Barry, I'm not telling you that wasn't a factor, but they had reached their end. I mean, like it was time for.
No, I 100% agree with you about that. But he was, you know, I was not.
Yeah, it was the best option at the position.
Right, and so you're willing to go eight games, you know, and Dave's lost his job. You know, I mean, if Daniel Jones, let's say there was no injury guarantee and they started Daniel Jones, he was clearly the best, you know, the best way for Dave to turn that season around. So I didn't get it. Thanks for giving me the time, but, you know, God, please.
I mean,
don't,
what do you?
Don't,
I mean,
don't
but
make
here's the thing,
the
Barry. I get it. You can bring up the contract, and the contract always plays into it, right? So there was the, the injury guarantee. But if you hearken back before Daniel asked for his release, I mean, he was relegated to the bench by the head coach, and he was the scout team quarterback. Like, it was time to go. I mean, it was just. And the Giants handled it well because they had great respect for Daniel, and they granted him his release, and he ended up latching on with the Minnesota Vikings. So, you know, but, you know, unfortunately that relationship, the way that it ended between the head coach and the quarterback, not exactly ideal. and Daniel wanted out, and the Giants, you know what, handled it well in the end, and we saw the success that he had. And there are members in that Giant organization that root for Daniel Jones to be successful, because as an individual, regardless of what you think about Daniel Jones as a player, right? And I might like him a little bit more than you do, but Daniel Jones, in terms of as an individual, as a human being, is a very good man. Quarter 12. Melusis with you. 888-808-1019.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Let's head out to West Hempstead. It's Frank. It's the fan. What's going on, Frank? How are you?
I'm good, Moose. How about yourself?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. Talking to you on the fan, nothing. Life couldn't be better. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, I feel the same way, buddy. So we used to talk, before I get to my miserable jet point, we used to talk when you were on the night shift, probably like 12 years ago. I think I was actually on the fan with you when Jackson was born. Is he now like 12 or 13 now?
Yeah, Jackson? He's 12. 12.
There you
12
go.
Years old.
There
time flies, Frank.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I just got a quick question. I'll ask you, and then I'll hang up and listen to your response. As far as the Jets are concerned, listen, let's face it, I'm a 55-year fan. It's the same thing every single year for the last 16. I'm getting sick and tired of it, but I'm a diehard, so I'll never leave them. But if you were the general manager of this team, would you go after the Mendoza if you can, or that kid that I watched last night that I thought was tremendous in Chambliss?
Oh, from Ole Miss. You're talking about the Ole Miss quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, the other prospect at the top of the draft, I don't know with the Ole Miss quarterback what year is. I don't know if he's 3 years out of high school, but I got to look that up. But the other prospect that was well thought of going into it didn't play particularly well, but that's a really good Texas Tech defense. Orange Bowl early yesterday down in Miami, you know, was more the quarterback at Oregon. But, you know, as we talked to Ralph Russo from the Associated Press earlier in the week, a guy that has not a lot of college experience, not a lot of college starts. So it's a little bit more of projection, might have a little bit of a higher ceiling, than Mendoza. Listen, the knocks, when you talk to people, the knocks on Mendoza is that he's not an elite level athlete. He's got an unbelievable arm. But you know, his athleticism gets called into question a little bit. He's not going to be this kind of guy that's going to be this dual threat guy in the National Football League. Obviously, got to go out there and protect him. Ability to go out there and decipher information. The big positive for him is ability to go out there and play well. His ability to go out there and play well in big time spots, into pressure spots. I mean, that throw, it was an unbelievable catch against Penn State earlier in the season, but that was fantastic. And, you know, Cignetti and the Hoosiers have been, I mean, I don't, and I there was this kind of statement last night. Cignetti has made a lot of college coaches look kind of bad and inept at times for what he has done at Indiana. I mean, it's remarkable. And maybe it's the fact that he was able to instill his culture because he brought a number of his players over from James Madison. But, you know, that was a virtuoso performance against Alabama. I mean, to the point where, you know, they're benching their starting quarterback. I understand he's not being the epitome of health early on in the third quarter, looking to get some sort of a spark. And that's an Alabama team that is really, really athletic. And Indiana, you know, outside of maybe a little bit of a struggle early, Indiana really got rolling in that Rose Bowl and made that an absolute laugher. The interesting thing is that you look at the teams with the byes, you know, outside of Indiana, they all lost. Ohio State lost, Texas Tech lost, Indiana won, and Georgia lost. So the only team, and you think about this, Look at the teams that are now going to competing for this national championship. I think you got to go all the way back to 2001, last time Miami won a national title with Michael Irvin on the sidelines, you know, as they were victorious over Ohio State. But, you know, Ole Miss, tremendous win over Georgia last night. I don't think they've won once solely. I think you have to go back to all the way 1960 where they shared a national championship. And you look at Indiana's never won one, Oregon never won one. It's remarkable where we're at right now. Now, there needs to be some sort of an adjustment. Give Cignetti a ton of time, kind of credit. After he knocked off Ohio State in that Big Ten championship game, you know, I remember this clear as day, watching him get interviewed after the game. He said, the goal now for me and my staff is to maintain these guys going out there and staying sharp and being ready to play. And we're going to be off for a long amount of time here, for the better part of 3+ weeks. They were great. And, you know, going into these semifinals, even though each and every one of these teams, I think Ole Miss is taking on the idea of being kind of America's team because of Lane Kiffin, even though he's getting introduced at a women's basketball game last night down at LSU. Lane Kiffin jumping ship and going to LSU, I think a lot of people are rooting for Ole Miss to go out there and win a national title this year. But you've got Miami, obviously the history of the Canes and the U in college football. They've been a great story. Oregon has been a brand here, and so, you know, ever since really Chip Kelly put them on the map years ago. And then you've got this great Indiana story, and Cignetti has done a remarkable job. I mean, jaw-droppingly good. It really is. And Mendoza obviously being the quarterback of that team, and that was a tremendous performance in the Rose Bowl. But if I were the Jets, what would I do? Back to your question, long story long. What would I do if I were the Jets here, sitting here, and I was the general manager? I've said it time and time again. I cannot convince myself, because I have a need at the position, to love a player. I have to love that player. And that's why you have teams that do work, because you could always learn something on quarterbacks going into an NFL draft, because you could always pick up things in your scouting, and you want to make sure you're on point with your scouting. So even if you have a quarterback in place, you always are going out there, you're still scouting those positions, because you never know how you can refine your scouting department in doing so. But you don't convince yourself you love a player. You have to love the player nonetheless. And that's really what it is. But if you convince your, if you look at it and you do go through the scouting and you say Mendoza's the real deal, I have no shadow of a doubt as an organization that he is going to be a franchise quarterback, then you know what you do? You move heaven and earth to go out there and try and get him. The issue you have is if the Raiders go out there, end up with the number one overall pick, I mean, they're going to be drafting a quarterback. The goal then is the Giants having the number one overall pick. And there's been another kind of narrative that's been thrown out there that the Giants would never trade with the Jets. And I think that's complete and utter nonsense. I really do. Because I think you got to worry about what's going on your block. You got to worry about what's going on your organization. And if you're the Giants and the Jets end up offering you an unbelievable amount to move up, say for argument's sake, the Giants lose to the Cowboys, the Raiders are victorious against the Chiefs this week, the Giants have the number one overall pick, you have three or four teams, clearly Mendoza separated himself from Moore and everybody, every other quarterback prospect in this NFL draft, and there are three or four teams that, you know what, highest bidder gets them. That's it. And if that ends up being the Jets, that ends up being the Jets. And you don't worry about what Mendoza ends up turning out to be for the New York Jets, because you know what? You already have your quarterback in place when you're looking at Jackson Dart. And that's what makes this Giant job that much more attractive, because you've got the quarterback in place. You are not in quarterback hell. You're not sitting there in the Sahara Desert looking for a drink of water, looking for a bridge quarterback, whether it be Mac Jones, looking for a guy to get you to the next year's NFL draft. You've got your quarterback in place. Now it's a matter of going out there and continuing to develop that player. 1158, Malusa's with you. 888-808-1019. Back with your calls and more. 2 hours down, two to play with. Coming up in the next hour, we'll talk a little Jet football. Al Iannazone will join us from Newsday. Nick Kostos will join us. Back end of the 12 o'clock hour, we'll talk a little baseball, kicking off the 1 o'clock hours. John Heyman from the New York Post will join us as well. It's a Malusa's Friday midday right here, the Fan in New York.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.